She said, do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cider Nation podcast, a unique baseball podcast. Today, we have Red Sox right-handed pitcher Austin Bryce. Thanks for coming on, Austin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I guess first things first, Austin, could you talk to us a little bit about your story on your arm slot and kind of when you started to drop down?
Well, you know, I've always felt pretty comfortable throwing drop down. I think that kind of all rooted from the fact that I was an infielder earlier on in my career, not professional career, but definitely amateur side of things. But I guess whenever I switched to pitching full time, I felt that it was kind of necessary to follow this, I guess, generic recipe of, you know, four seam, great backspin, you know, the perfect 12-6 backspin, and the curveballs, and you try to get it 12-6 as much as you can. And so I just kind of followed that. And then, you know, come 2019, I just decided that wasn't working for me anymore, and I decided to make a change.
When you decided to kind of drop down, was that more yourself making that decision, or did you have any pitching coaches talk to you, or is that just more your, that was on your own?
No, that was completely on my own.
Gotcha.
I got DFA'd after the 2018 season, and you know, I was kind of found myself in a rut when I first, you know, kind of broke into the big leagues. It was real difficult for me to find the strike zone. I wasn't really that consistent. And I don't know, I just felt like I was always fighting myself throwing the ball. That's the best way I can put it. I just needed to find something that was repeatable for me. And I just said the heck with it. And just started throwing sidearm as soon as I got picked up. A week before spring training by the Marlins. And I think that was kind of a shock for them to see the way I was throwing in the camp. I got a few questions about that because also my velocity dropped significantly. And but I just ran with it, man. And, you know, I figured I had nothing to lose at that point. So I just did it.
And they were open to it?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
I ended up having a really good camp, and I ended up breaking with the team, and I had a really good season. And so, I guess you can't really argue with that sometimes.
And I know Austin's still kind of new, I guess, to the lower arm slot, but is there any mechanical tips that you'd have or anything that's kind of helped you so far?
I think I wouldn't say, you know, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask for tips, but, definitely, you know, just find something that's natural. I mean, it feels so natural for me to just drop my arm and let it kind of fly, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's just what I went with. I think, like I said, I just fell in that rut of that generic, straight over top, try to make the ball ride and try to make your, you know, breaking ball break 12-6, you know? And I think so many pitchers get caught up in that nowadays that they're almost scared to be themselves, you know? So it's just something that has always felt good to me. And in terms of tips and tricks, I think really it's completely up to the individual, you know, on how far you want to take it or, you know, how comfortable, quote, unquote, it feels to you.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too can be more of a mental, the mental part of maybe having to drop down. Would you have any advice for anyone maybe kind of, you know, debating on if they should drop down?
Well, I can guarantee you the guys that are talking about dropping down have nothing to lose at that point.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of that's kind of the last straw for everybody. It's like, you know, it's this one thing isn't working. It's time for me to try something else. And I was at that point in my career where I was just, I was tired of grinding, you know? And so I needed to find something. But, you know, to be honest, I always had a really good fastball. I've always thrown the ball hard. But it was just something that I needed to give it, the hitters a different look at, you know. I just, and in this day and age, guys are throwing upper 90s now. And it really doesn't matter how hard you throw anymore, because everybody, there's some guy out there that throws harder, you know? So and the league is so accustomed to seeing guys throw straight over top and throwing the ball at the top of the zone and throwing, you know, really good, nasty breaking balls, that it helps to have something that makes you stand out. And if it's something that works for you, something you can run with.
And then, Austin, have you kind of noticed, you know, a difference, you know, between maybe the batter's reaction to your new arm slot?
I just think it's so much easier for me to tunnel pitches.
Okay.
And I mean by that, by just like everything that comes out of my hand, kind of it looks the same coming out no matter what I throw.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a huge thing, you know. And I've always had, you know, ride to my fastball and stuff like that. And it stuck around whenever I lowered my arm slot. So I guess I was kind of lucky in that instance that I kind of have an untraditional sidearm approach, that it doesn't really sink and run too much when I throw a four seam. So I guess I still got really lucky that things turned out like that.
And you touched about a little bit before, you had a little bit of drop in velocity, I guess. Kind of what were you throwing over the top, and then kind of what are you throwing now there, Austin?
You know, when I first got into the big leagues, I was, you know, mid 90s, just like, it just seems like everybody, you know. I was normally 94, 97. And okay. I threw the ball really hard. I got traded to the Reds after I broke into the league with the Marlins. And, you know, kind of threw the same there. I would say I kind of plateaued a little bit more there, just because I found myself in a normal relief role. You know, you're not always that fresh feeling. And then as soon as I dropped an arm slot, man, I was like max effort, like 90, 91. And I think that was like the biggest shock for me, was like, I wasn't getting that jump out of my hand like I normally would, you know, with the overhand throw. And I'm not going to lie, you know, I kind of had some worries with it and stuff, but I just figured I'd stick with it, because it's, you know, like I said, I mean, you get to a point like that where you have nothing to lose, you know. It's like, you know, you just got to keep running with it. So I did, and it ended up working out for me.
And I guess it's something I've talked to other, you know, guests on here about, kind of perceived velocity. And that's hopefully where that 90, 91 still looks maybe to the hitter, that 96, 97 over the top. Is that maybe something you've kind of seen, or?
For sure. Because I think it helped out my breaking ball a lot more. It was just a lot more consistent. And so I had a front to back pitch, you know, like a change up or something to slow to hit the hitter down. And so it did make my fastball play a lot more. But you know, I was also a lot more lucky, I guess, that, as I played through the season, my velocity kept climbing and climbing. And now I feel like I'm honestly back to where I was when I was throwing overhand. So, I've been really fortunate. Things have kind of worked out, that way, I guess, you know.
And then, Austin, off speed wise, kind of what pitches are you throwing, or what kind of, I guess, did the slider come naturally for you, or?
I learned a slider in 2015.
Okay.
And it was something that I was able to get over the plate a lot more consistency than a traditional curveball. It was something that I was kind of bouncing back and forth between it and a curveball. I just went ahead and stuck with that, the slider, you know, per se, because I was also throwing it probably about 88. And so it was a more traditional slider. And then I just kind of broke them into this hybrid combination of this slider curveball now. And so it's something that, you know, I can throw for strikes now. I can throw, you know, when I don't want to throw for strikes. And I just have seen that consistency with it a lot, you know, a lot more so than when I just had a traditional curveball.
And then, Austin, is there anything that you do differently pitching to lefty and righty?
It's all scouting reports now, you know?
Okay.
So there's a ton of, you know, spots that maybe your strengths and, are actually the strengths for the hitter as well. And so you kind of have to pick and choose your battles, you know, when you're facing certain guys. And, you know, some guys have weaknesses where your strengths are, and some guys have strengths where your weaknesses are. And so it's something that you just have to keep in mind when you're out there facing some of these guys, that there's always, you know, in the big leagues now, there's always that one pitch, you know, damage that can happen, you know. So it's something you got to be really mindful with when you go out on the mound.
And then, Austin, have you had many teammates that were sidearm submarine pitchers?
Actually, now that, like, it's something that I do, I've actually noticed more and more guys. You know, there's probably honestly the same amount of guys that have always been there.
Okay.
But I think now it's like I can kind of, whenever I see a guy, you know, throws with a similar arm slot as me or something even more extreme, I tend to notice it more and just kind of, you know, checklist, you know, what they do to certain batters and stuff, and just how I can help my game out or vice versa. And, you know, so, yeah, it's, I think I just notice it more than I used to. But yeah, I've played with quite a few guys now that are sidewinders, so to speak.
Probably paying more attention to it. I remember watching guys growing up. I remember even thinking there's no way that I'm going to throw like that. And then little did I know that
yeah,
I was. And then all of a sudden, as soon as I drop down, you start to pay attention to all the guys that are on, even on, you know, other teams and teammates. And yeah.
Yep, for sure.
And then, Austin, you know, you're born in Hong Kong, correct?
Yeah.
And I guess the, you know, first ever MLB player born in Hong Kong. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
When I was younger, kind of traveled all over the place with my parents. My dad was just like his job. He was always working in construction. He kind of had like a specialty job that, you know, made him move around all over the place. And so mom was super pregnant with me, and you know, he ended up having to go to Hong Kong they were building a waste management plant there. Okay. And so he was helping with the contracting and all that cool stuff over there. And so naturally I came out into the world over on that side of the globe. And I wasn't there long, you know. I think I was literally born, I think, you know, my parents were only there for a few more months. And so it wasn't anything, you know, that was like, you know, that I got to hang out, you know, and soak up the culture. It was kind of just the luck of the draw that I happened to pop out over there, you know. So you know, it's nothing too crazy in terms of a story.
Have you been back there?
I haven't. And it's just, you know, it's tough. You know, it feels like 1,000 flights a year. The last thing you want to do, you know, when you have time, is jump on another flight for like 20 hours. And so it's, I don't know. I feel like I want to, and I feel like I eventually will at some point, but now it's just mustering up the will to want to go over there and stuff like that. And so, and now with this whole Corona thing, you know, I don't even know, you know, so it's, I don't know. I'm sure the opportunity will present itself down the road somewhere.
Yeah. It's definitely a long flight. I went with kind of we were a makeshift kind of a semi-pro team Canada. We played in a tournament in Hong Kong, and it's a long flight. I mean, you get free alcohol, which helps, but
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, like I said, you know, I think in all, I think it's realistically like a 15-hour flight or something crazy.
Yeah.
And so it's, that's quite a bit to be on a tube traveling 400 miles per hour, you know, 40,000 feet in the air. So it's, I think I'll down the road, maybe I'll find some time, but I don't think right now is it.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. And then Austin, could you talk to us a little bit about kind of baseball, what it looked like for you growing up?
You know, with me traveling around all the time with my parents, it was actually kind of tough for me in terms of sports, because I was constantly, you know, new team, new friends, new faces, the whole nine. So I felt like I was kind of the, when I was playing sports growing up, kind of the, I don't know, just not the hometown kid all the time. So I really always had to scrap and fight to, I don't know, kind of make a name for myself, if you want to call it. And so I think, honestly, just to turn into another story, that kind of has helped me down the road into now, kind of, you know, having that, if you want to call it a lone mentality, you know, through baseball and stuff. So, you know, nothing crazy. You know, I wasn't really a hometown kid. You know, I grew up in a small town, but I, you know, kind of got there late through grade school and stuff. So I wasn't really like the, you know, the typical small town, you know, kid that made it and stuff. I just kind of, you know, breezed through it. And now, you know, here I am.
And then Austin, did you play any other sports growing up?
Played soccer.
Okay.
And honestly I did, because I was always like the smallest kid growing up. I think a lot of it was because I was constantly playing up in age through all my sports. And so I always had that small kid syndrome about me. And so like football and basketball just weren't really my things, because I feel like it was just like the kids I was facing were constantly 50 pounds heavier and 6 inches taller than me. So it was, basketball and football wouldn't have been very fun for me. So I just stuck to soccer. I ran pretty fast. And so that was kind of my off season sport. And I played that all through grade school. And even in high school, ended up going to state championship playoffs. And I mean, we lost the last round, you know, it sucked, but you know, it was something I really enjoyed doing.
Could you talk to us a little bit about your MLB debut?
2016, I got called up in middle August or something like that. I think that a guy went on the IL, or I mean, at the time it was the DL at the time, but now it's the IL. But got called up, and I remember like all that week, I didn't even throw for a full week leading up to that point. And I think they were kind of seeing whether this guy was going to be able to throw or not. And so they just kept like not throwing me through all these games. And I'm just like, what the heck is going on? And so finally, about like 1:30 in the morning or something crazy, a buddy of mine that was in the big leagues at the time texted me. He's like, hey, man, are you coming up? And it wasn't like 10 seconds after he texted me that manager from a AAA team called me and told me I was going up. So I ended up getting called up, you know, and went from New Orleans to Miami. And I think I honestly sat there for, you know, 3 or 4 days before I even made a debut. I don't even remember. My debut went really well against the White Sox. And, you know, I've been in it ever since then.
Austin, any advice, or could you talk a little bit about kind of just the grind in the minors and, you know, just the mental part of baseball?
I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's nothing but a big mental game. Yeah. I mean, I constantly tell this to a lot of, like, you know, younger kids and stuff. And I think everybody's so worried about, you know, talent and ability and, you know, throwing the ball hard, hitting the ball hard, that it's kind of lost somewhere, the whole grind aspect, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I think, man, you look at it from guys from rookie ball all the way to the big leagues, every single one of those guys, I mean, and I mean everyone that is in a pro ball uniform has the ability to play in the big leagues. Everybody. Yep. All have similar abilities, all have the talent, everything. And I think at the end of the day, it's just the guy who stays consistent and the guy who can, you know, stay level the whole time. And you know, and then honestly, to add on to that, sometimes it's just luck, you know. Sometimes you're in the right place at the right time. I've seen that happen plenty of times. And then that's just another mental game in itself, because if you're that guy that it happens to be the right place at the right time, it's being able to seize that opportunity and you know, show to whoever it is that, hey, I belong in this spot. So, you know, I think that's the only thing I can pass along to anybody. It's like, you know, literally any and everybody can do it. Any and everybody who is, you know, who is driven to be at that level has the ability to do it. It's just being able to grind it out and stay consistent. It's who can be the best at being consistent. That's all it is. It really has nothing to do with talent and ability at that point. It's who can do their job the best for the longest.
No, that's a very good point. It definitely, consistency. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you see those guys, you know, on TV. It's like, man, perfect example is like a Greg Maddux type or something like that. And guys are like, man, this guy throws upper 80s, how's he so successful? And it's like, you know, look at what he does. He's consistent day in and day out. And when you can show that you can do that, you can do a backflip on the mound if you wanted to every single day, as long as you got results. And so I think that's all a mental part right there, is just being able to go in day in, day out through the ups and downs and put a product on the field that people can expect, you know, and it's not quite a coin flip. And so I think that's honestly, that's the separator right there.
No, and I always love, you know, talking about Greg Maddux and even just, you know, would he get drafted now? I don't know. I'd hope so.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like he would get drafted, and I feel like, you know, just with stuff and, you know, like his general stuff, I feel like he would probably be given an opportunity, you know, so I feel like those guys, you know, they were crazy. They were just, like I said, it was like when they got on the mound, you knew what you were going to get. And I think that's the biggest thing for teams, you know, in the major leagues, is whenever you go on the mound, they want to kind of have that thing of like, you know, we put you out there, we know what we're going to get. We're going to get A, B, and C, and we know it's going to be there every single day. And, you know, sometimes you're going to get, you know, you're going to be shaky and you're not going to have something that day, or it's going to go wrong, but it's the ability to bounce back the next day and re-deliver the product again. So I think that's honestly the separator between a major leaguer and a minor leaguer, is that.
And Austin, you've done a little bit of both in your career, being a starter and a reliever. Is there anything personally that you prefer?
I mean, looking back at it, I wish I would have hung on to starting a little bit more, you know? Okay. And cause yeah, I didn't know any better. You know, I knew there was a quicker path to the big leagues being a reliever. And I knew there was, you know, it wasn't the term easier is not a good word for it, but like, I guess maybe in the minors that it could have worked that way, but you know, it was just something that, you know, you had to apply yourself for 15 minutes as opposed to potentially 2.5 hours, you know? So it was that aspect too, of like, you know, I was kind of in that mindset of like, man, freaking starting is a grind, you know, 'cause you could be out there for 2 straight hours and you know, that's mentally, man, that's just like a haul. And so, you know, I felt like relieving always probably fit me a little bit better. But you know, they both have pros and cons. Now, you know, after doing both, you know, they're both extremely hard to do, you know, and there's not really that much of a separator between the two. Because where you you know, lack in innings made up as a reliever, as opposed to a starter, you're gaining in, you know, just tearing down your body because you're throwing, you know, 7 out of 9 days, you know? So it's, they both have their pros and cons, man, that match up in the end that, you know, you can't really point out and be like, you know, one's easier than the other, you know? So it's, you know, I've seen that over the past couple of years, just like what it takes to do one or the other. And they're both not like fun. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of preparation and a lot of, you know, mental fortitude to do both. So, you know, it's a grind, man.
And then Austin, any advice for, you know, relief pitching, just as far as just kind of hanging out in the bullpen or, you know, that part of it, kind of knowing when to, you know, stay hot or get warm or not overthrowing?
Well, overthrowing, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it this spring, you know, a younger guy, you know, they'll tell him he's going in and he's thrown 40 pitches on the mound before he's going in, you know, and that works, you know, in the minor leagues and in, you know, in spring ball, but in the long terms, you're kind of weighing what type of stress you want to be putting on your body for the long run. You know, you're thinking about September, October. You're not thinking about, you know, March, April, May. You know you're going to feel pretty good those first few months. It's when June hits that all of a sudden you wake up in the morning and you're like, you have to sit on the edge of your bed for a little bit longer than you did, you know, before. So I think that's a huge thing. And I had to learn that was the amount of throwing that it took to be a reliever. You know, in terms of sitting in the bullpen, just having a routine that you stick to every single day can create that feel of control, you know, because as a reliever, you know, everything's completely out of your control. You know, you're a phone call away from doing any and every job, you know, on the field that day. So just having a routine and just kind of knowing your situation and, you know, and recognizing how the game's going, I think is just big as a reliever. But in terms of being around for a long time, what type of stress you put on your body, for sure, that I would say that's probably number one on my list. After being a reliever for a bit is the amounts of throwing. And just kind of counting your bullets, you know, before the game, because that stuff all adds up, man. 5 extra throws a day because you feel stiff, you know.
Absolutely.
That adds up, you know what I mean? That's like, you're talking hundreds of throws throughout the year that you didn't even have to take, but you took them because, you know, you didn't quite feel comfortable when you could have just thrown those out on the mound that day, you know?
Yeah.
So that's huge, man. I would say that's number one biggest thing for any reliever, is to learn that side of things. And that's tough to do in a college and high school environment, you know, because you're not subject to every single day there being a game and the potential for you to be throwing, you know. So I think that's a big step. That's a huge step when it comes to professional baseball.
And then, Austin, kind of what has been your favorite part of dropping down?
Well, now it's like I'm throwing just as hard as I was before. So now it's like it just has added this completely new weirdness to my fastball. You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's the only way I can explain it, is not only am I throwing hard now, but it's also like added this weird like rise thing, you know, to where it's like I'm almost throwing uphill. And so it's just, I guess I get some enjoyment out of that, because, you know, you can see if you really analyze hitters after you throw and, you know, pitch by pitch, analyze how they're taking pitches, how they swung at a certain pitch, you know, how they took a pitch, and see some of the reactions that you get out of certain guys. It can be really fun to be out there and just know that, you know, that you're winning, you know, in a certain situation. And then other times you're not, you know, like you face a guy like a Freddie Freeman or something like that. And it's just kind of like, it's like, here we go. You know, it's like you kind of, you're just like, just don't hit the ball out of the park. Every other result, I'll be fine. I mean, with those guys, it kind of is what it is. But with, you know, most of your middle lineup, you know, just typical lineup and stuff, you can get some cool reactions out of certain guys and see how, you know, your pitches spread and how they tunnel and stuff and what type of, you know, takes you get. And that's just the game within the game, you know, that I've kind of had to learn over the years. But it's a lot more fun when you're funky, you know, and get to see the reactions of the hitters and stuff.
And then, Austin, it's just time for our ninth inning call to the bullpen. So it's just going to be some questions just to learn a little bit more about you.
Yeah.
Favorite NHL team?
It would have to be the Hurricanes, right? I mean, with me being in Carolina, I guess I have to get committed to them.
Favorite travel destination?
Home. It's kind of sad when home is my travel destination, because I spend 70% on the road. So going back home is a pretty fun travel destination for me.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All-time favorite professional wrestler?
You got me there. I don't think I ever watched wrestling growing up. I don't know, Hulk Hogan, maybe, just because I just happen to know his name.
And then, Austin, what is the capital of Canada?
It is, I want to say like Calgary or something like that, like something random. Because I don't want to say Toronto or Montreal, because they just seem way too easy.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Is it Calgary?
No, it's the they have the NHL team, the Senators. If that helps.
Ottawa.
Yes.
I knew it was like some like random. I knew it couldn't have been Toronto or Montreal. That would have been way too easy.
And then, if you could golf or have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would it be?
Three people, dead or alive. Probably, like, I don't know. Probably Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Let's see, another. Probably Al Pacino. And Nolan Ryan.
And then would it be golf or dinner?
Most likely golf. Dinner's too uptight. I feel like golf you can.
Any particular course?
Go. I don't know. Let's just say Pebble Beach, because who wouldn't want to play Pebble Beach?
And if you could be an Olympian in another sport, summer or winter, what sport would you like to try, Austin?
I could be an Olympian. I would probably do either bobsledding or the 100 meter, the 100 meter sprint in track.
Yeah.
That would be awesome, because that means you're one of the fastest people in the world, and that would be super cool. But and then bobsledding, because you're doing like 200 miles an hour in a rickety sled. So that would be pretty awesome too.
Yeah, I've done it a couple times. There's the track here in Calgary, and it's not as fun as it looks.
No, man, you watch it on TV, and like you hear they're like, oh yeah, this is a state of the art sled, and then like they do the GoPro shot, and it's like vibrating and sounds like it's about to fall apart. And it's like, yeah, it's like cool. It's made of carbon fiber. That doesn't mean it's not going to explode upon impact at 180 miles an hour. You know, so yeah, it'd be pretty cool though. Watching, I mean, you watch it on TV, those guys are flying. And so, I mean, I think that'd be pretty awesome to do.
And then lastly, Austin, on the 2014 Jupiter Hammerheads, do you remember the name of the Canadian infielder?
Canadian infielder, Terrence Daylett.
Yes. Absolutely. And you play with many Canadians?
I totally forgot he was Canadian too, because he went to school in Kentucky. I don't know if he went to Kentucky, but I know he went to school in Kentucky, and that was like, I always mental note him being a Kentucky guy, and then totally having to change that up because he was Canadian. So yes, I was almost a good trick question.
He lost his Canadian going to Kentucky.
I think you lose every you if you go to a place like Kentucky or something like that, or Ohio, you're going to lose Canadian. I can tell you that right now.
Did you play with any other Canadians, Austin?
I'm sure I have. Joey Votto, Canadian.
Okay, yep.
Trying to think of some others. I want to say I didn't play with him, but is it Soroka from Canada?
Yeah, he's actually from Calgary. Yeah,
so I, you know, played against him, I feel like 1,000 times, and watched him pitch. I feel like every time we played the Braves, he was pitching. So, you know, I know him and, of course, Terrence, and then trying to think some other guys. I feel it's a lot easier than what you think, because I feel like it's a big deal. Like, you know, guys from Canada, they let you know they're from Canada, you know. So it's like, I feel like it shouldn't be as hard, but
especially in the baseball world, it's kind of a small right?
It's like, yeah. Like it's like
you didn't make it in
you
hockey.
Either do hockey or it's like it's freezing cold. I guess I'll play baseball. No, that's it. Unless you know of some, I think that's all I can think of right now.
No, I appreciate you coming on, Austin. I wish you all the best this season.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
She said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah, you better run, you better take cover."